nature is a great metaphor for life. You know, it is life in so many ways.
That was Gary Murray of LN, one of Velvet Blue Music's most inspiring artists to date. Trying to get a hold of Gary was pretty tough, to say the least. We learned early on that computers and social media are not really his thing, and once we finally had a chance to contact and interview him, it was clear that we had to tell his story in this episode. As we got to know him, we discovered that in his teen years, his dreams weren't that typical. For instance, becoming a rock star and all that entails, like life on the road, performing in front of thousands of fans and so on, but rather Gary's one true passion has always been to display his heart through song. Living in a small town in Ohio, Gary started to explore different avenues of art, including songwriting. Even though he started kind of late in the game comparatively, it may just have benefited him. Let's examine the life of Velvet Blue Music's gentle giant Gary Murray in today's Velvet Blue Music podcast. Gary grew up in Bellevue, a small town in Ohio. He's lived there most of his life, excluding the time he attended Bowling Green University in the late 1990s. His dad was a blue-collar worker, working in the same factory for 46 years till he retired, and Gary enjoyed a close-knit family growing up. Not all his family members were musically inclined, however. His father wasn't, but his mother had enough interest in music to sing in her church choir, and his late sister Melinda played piano very well, giving a bit of inspiration to Gary from a young age. In those days, it was typical for parents to turn on whatever popular music was playing on the radio as they went about their day, but Gary's family preferred to fill their home with mid-century folk music, such as the Browns and country legend Merle Travis. To the Murrays, music was important, but their children weren't required to learn an instrument, and the one time Gary's mother attempted to have him learn piano involved an extremely strict piano teacher.
My mom did find me piano lessons because my sister played and I was really interested in going, and she found a woman that taught piano. And I had a total of 3 lessons. I mean, the woman was nice. She was very, very conservative, even back then, more conservative than anybody I've ever met. And she taught me some scales for the first couple lessons. She said, bring in a piece of music that you want to learn, even if it's a guitar song, and we'll work it out on the piano. I was only like 10 years old, maybe 11 years old. And I took in a Raspberry Beret by Prince, and she didn't like that very much. So she told my mom not to bring me back.
It would seem like this experience would have put him off playing music forever, but thankfully it didn't. And yearly visits to his uncle's home in West Virginia, where front porch bluegrass music was constantly in the air, captured Gary's interest. He enjoyed listening to the sounds of the raw country music echoing throughout the rolling hills nearby, and many of his songs reference these same hills. One evening, Gary's sister Melinda was playing the piano and she caught his attention with a piece called Love Story by French composer Francis Lai. That was a monumental moment for him. It lit an interest in live music that he would carry on throughout his life. He started to study the orchestration of popular composers of the time, especially loving the more complex arrangements, and he decided to learn guitar. Initially, he hoped that Christmas time would bring him a guitar, but instead, he would have to sacrifice his most prized possession for a used acoustic guitar.
Yeah, I was in college. It was like the beginning of my sophomore year of college, I think. And I traded a big comic book collection for an old Techamine, black Techamine guitar, Techamine, however you pronounce it. And I just learned how to play. I had that in my mind that I wasn't going to learn anybody's songs. Yeah, I'd sit and I'd play for hours just going through basic chords over and over again and making up stupid songs. I'd learn 3 chords and be singing a song to it and just learning how to sing and play at the same time to try to get the rhythms down. It's here.
Things started started to get interesting when Gary discovered a local music store called the Mad Hatter. He would constantly rummage through bargain CDs and tapes, discovering cool bands like Slowdive, Cocteau Twins, Sonic Youth, and the Red House Painters, to name a few. He was intrigued by the noisy guitar layers which really spoke to him, and they were like a breath of fresh air compared to the mainstream music that was being played on the radio at the time. With his new musical influences, he knew that sitting at home with his old acoustic guitar just wasn't enough now. He made some local musician friends, and soon he would begin to contribute his newfound guitar skills with a local band called Vacuum Star. We all know that Gary Murray is a writer of some of the most somber, melancholy music on VBM, and Vacuum Star was far from that. Funny enough, some members would eventually become long-term contributors to his music in the future, and it was while participating in this band that he gained experience playing side-by-side with other musicians, keeping his guitar tuned throughout the entire set, and enjoying the energy of a crowd for the first time. After playing for a few years in the band, he would occasionally collaborate with Vacuum Star guitarist Tori Freeman, drummer Nathan Abel, and bassist Denny Kopp to focus solely on songwriting. One memorable night happened at a party in Bellevue when they would write a full album's worth of songs in a single evening. I guess you could say Gary was being prepared to become the future frontman of one of VBM's much-loved bands.
You know, I've moved away from this area, an hour away to college. And, you know, when I got into college, I just wanted to start writing different things. And I started off with a four-track. And honestly, the first thing I recorded on the four-track was a cover of a Brown song. It was slowed down, acoustic. I'm like, you know what? I want to do something more like this. So I ended up writing like five or six songs, and I recorded them on cassette. And Nate lived closest to me at college. So one day I drove to Nate's house, and I'm like, hey, I made these songs. And, you know, we listened to them, and it's like, yeah, that's got something. And I think Winter Heart Sings from the first record was on there, and Tomorrow Came the Clouds might have been on there. Nate and I jammed it in his garage. So I called Tori and Casey back. So it was that was the original lineup. It was me, Tori, Casey, and Nate. Had about six or seven really tight songs that we all worked out. And then we set up in Tori's living room. Denny was still around this whole time. He finagled a bunch of equipment, and we set up in Tori's house in like four different rooms. My cat's digging over there. We set up like four different rooms with stuff, and we recorded the five song demo that became the LN demo.
His demo was finally put together, and now they just needed a name. Being a huge sci-fi fan, Gary would name his new band Love Neptune, deriving from a Jeffrey Carter novel. According to Gary, Neptune is fascinating. It's noticeable enough to be part of the solar system, but it's always forgotten.
So yeah, I had the demos, and I had them sitting around for a while, and then we heard Starflyer was coming through Ohio. This was probably 95. So yeah, Starflyer was coming through with Velour 100 was playing with them down in Columbus. And three of us, you know, jumped in a car and drove down to see him. And I was hoping, and I had a copy of the demo, I was just hoping to hand it to Jason, not looking for anything. You know, I was just going to say, hey, you know, we like your stuff and this is what we do. That was going to be it, you know. But I didn't see Jason the whole show, except when he was on stage. But the guy running the merch table was there, and I didn't really even talk to him much, I don't think. I mean, I think he told me about Velvet Blue, and I remember buying Transparent with Blue Eyes, the Pony Express 7-inch. And I handed him the cassette and said, you know, this is what we do. I wanted to give it to Jason, but I haven't seen him. And it was like a week or two later, I get an actual letter in the mail, you know, saying that, you know, they really liked the stuff.
I really don't remember my first interaction with him.
This is Jeff Cloud, owner of Velvet Blue Music.
He gave me those songs, and I thought, like, this, I love this. This is awesome. I'm always been a sucker for ballads. And the dude basically handed me, like, a whole record. Oh, it's between an EP and a record, but he basically handed me a whole session of ballads. So I'm like, gosh, I love this thing. I want to do this. I wanted to do it immediately when I got it. I don't remember how I got it, but I remember immediately I wanted to be involved with doing it.
Needless to say, 1996 was a great year for Gary. He was a few steps closer to graduating Bowling Green University. He reunited with his old bandmates and he started a fresh band and also recorded a handful of new songs. To top it off, his album would soon be one of the first releases on Velvet Blue Music. Of course, with some minor changes. The name Love Neptune was not really at the top of Jeff Cloud's list of names.
When I got the first demo, it was called Love Neptune. But then I had been working with Jupiter James, so I had my own pea brain. I thought, hey, I can't just be this, you know, space band label. So we've already got a Jupiter James. We can't be doing a Love Neptune. And then, you know, Ronnie had already Saturn Swinger. So I'm like, okay, we can't be covering all the planets. Something's got to change. So I told Gary, we can't do Love Neptune. It's too much like all the other stuff, you know. The only thing that would have made it worse if it was like Love Neptune 24. Thank God he didn't have a number, so we didn't have to do anything with that. But we did have to alter it. So we altered it to LN, which was really cool. And I think it's, to this day, it's very cool. It's a very mysterious name, you know. I like it.
Any LN fan can tell you that Gary wasn't on the road much. That is, not at all. It wasn't that he didn't want to promote his music or thought he was too good to do it, but mainly because his bandmates were married with children, and any musician can tell you that leaving work for 3 weeks with essentially no real pay can be quite difficult. Not to mention, some of the band members were still in their teens, and they were prevented by their parents from touring. If you're familiar with Gary's hometown of Bellevue, Ohio, it's not really known for its music scene and venues, but thankfully it was centrally located. It's an hour away from Columbus, Toledo, Cincinnati, and also Bowling Green University. All that to say, Gary didn't lack venues to perform in, and soon enough, LN would perform on the same stages that his favourite artists would. One such example is a popular underground venue named Speaking Tongues in Cleveland, Ohio, known for hosting bands like Low, The Promise Ring, Modest Mouse, and so on. LN were definitely getting their hands dirty, building the experience they needed and strengthening their live performances, and they would eventually open for bands such as Starflyer 59, Marilla's Forest, Fine China, etc. They were building a solid fan base while keeping their eyes on the next Velvet Blue Music release. After their successful debut album, Cool September Skies, one would imagine Gary and his band getting the ball rolling on the next release right away, but that wasn't to be. The reasons were multiple. Gary was still attending college an hour and a half away, plus some of the members were busy with their families, so it really wasn't that easy for the band to find time to get together and write and practice consistently. But eventually everything came together and the long-awaited album, Plumbrook, was released 2.5 years later, in 1999. Gary was never a fan of overproduced recordings, but he wanted the quality of Plumbrook to be up a few notches from the days of Cool September Skies. Always on a small budget, he enjoyed finding creative recording techniques, which he felt added to the fun and the mystery of the process. LN wanted their next record to sound amazing. And thankfully, Dalton Brand, their recording engineer, had just upgraded to digital recording and had other tools that helped them achieve the sound they wanted.
Dalton had moved up to either an ADAT or some sort of digital recording, and you know, that's where we really got that extra, you know, boost of quality in there. I think we knew the song so well because, I mean, that time had passed and we'd played them so many times that it was just kind of, yeah, we showed up and we recorded and left.
Not surprisingly, this EP sold out quickly, prompting the band to get to work on the next set of songs that they released a year later called Imaginary Cars. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this particular one, but just know that Brian Patton from As the Story Grows podcast loved it so much that he named his band after a song off of that record, Echo Broke Alone. Anyway, everything was in place with seemingly nothing in their way.
Right after Plumbrook came out was when working as a band completely fell apart. Nate had his family, you know, he wasn't around, he couldn't do it. Casey, I think about that time is when he moved to Atlanta to go to school. So he was gone, he was out of the picture. And at that point I realized that, wow, I am LM, you know, it's no longer a band effort.
This is a common story, unfortunately. Gary had hoped to write and perform music with LN forever, but with the sudden ending of the band, his dreams came to a halt. Anyone else would have just put down the guitar and turned to other outlets, but Gary continued to write and record, which ironically made him feel better. Writing new material was, in a sense, therapy for him, not just a project. In 2001, while juggling school and work, he released Novel. It has been one of his most loved albums, and Jeff definitely shares in that sentiment.
I mean, we did Cool September Skies, and when he rolled in the Novel, I was like, man, it's literally like almost like magic. There's a couple songs on there that are just magic. I love them. I literally love them. And they're timeless because that's very old now. I listen to it right now, and it sounds like something people would be doing right now.
Other BBM artists would begin to recognise that LN was an important player in the BBM lineup. This time, the feedback Gary received was a little different. For instance, one morning he received a letter from an LN fan.
From a man who had lost a baby and said that song helped him through it. You know, I just sat there and just, wow, that's incredible. You know, that it's horrible that he had to go through that, but, you know, it's incredible that something that I created, you know, helped him in the time that he needed it. That's what keeps the music going, is those little reminders here and there.
Gary soon realized that his music was making an impact on people in a very real and special way. Remember, he didn't really have much interest in touring and capitalizing on his work, but he was just glad his fans found encouragement in his songs. Even to the point where one fan loved LN so much, he created a website dedicated to making all the lyrics and chords available. How's that for fandom? Gary actually found this useful one evening when someone requested him to play a particular song and he'd forgotten it, and a laptop was provided for him to reference, so he didn't have an excuse. Kind of a blessing and a curse if you think about it. As soon as Gary released his next batch of songs, called Dirt Floor Hotel Part 1, he started to get fan mail similar to the one we mentioned earlier. One that really impacted him was from a young girl who recently lost her father.
The other one that really hit me hard was because of my West Virginia connection. I had a note from a younger girl. I think she was maybe 16 or 17. And she wrote me a letter. And her father had died in a mining accident. And they played California off of the Dirt Floor Records at his funeral. And I was just like stabbed to the heart. You know, that's some tough stuff to handle.
Father was a miner, lived and died in a cold, dark hole. Someday I pray I'll see him again. Let the Jordan wash off this. I've never been to California, have no use for all your gone. And I'll have a mansion on a hill one day when Jesus calls me.
The first time I met Gary Murray was in 2001.
This is Josh Dooley, frontman of VBM's MAP and former member of Starflyer 59.
We had heard his records, so we were fans. And then we met him. We did the two shows. It was like March 2001, and we got to have dinner with him afterwards. And then we were at Niagara Falls. We got to see Niagara. We get back to the hotel, and this guy pulls out his guitar, starts writing a song, and it's on an LN record. And I was so just blown away at his discipline, because it's – I've learned, and I'm okay to say this, but writing songs is not easy for me. It takes a lot of discipline and focus, and I love saying, ta-da, look at my song, but the 4 hours or 4 days or however long it takes to get there, it's pretty grueling. And this guy just created a song based on his day that day. Nothing but positive feelings about the guy.
From Niagara.
Gary's resistance to touring, in 2006 the impossible seemed to have happened. A small tour was finally set up, featuring Gary and Josh Dooley, promoting a 7-inch that they collaborated on, called Friends Who Play Guitar. It was a spin-off to Starflyer 59's 2001 release, Leave Here a Stranger.
I think he was saying, if you were to do a Starflyer cover, what would you do? I don't remember who asked it first. I think he had already said, next time around. And so we were brainstorming these ideas. And then I knew Chris Stellman from Oklahoma, and he had this new label, and he wanted to focus on 7-inches. And so I just had this idea. I go, well, what if we asked him if he wants to do a split 7-inch, and you're the A side, I'm on the B side. And then Gary was like, I'll do the artwork. And I asked Jason for his blessing and just told him, like, nobody's making any money. We're just going to make enough money to manufacture the records, and that's that. And he goes, oh, have at it. Like, have a blast. So it was just a really cool thing where it was like me and Gary channeling Jason Martin and putting it out on this guy Chris's label. And we just did it for the love of music. We didn't like it when bands made a song really hard to find, and then 5 or 10 years later, it was on a greatest hits CD that you could just get. So we decided, like, if we're going to do this, this is where it's going to live. And it's just going to be some super rare thing. So, yeah, I don't think we've ever put those versions digitally anywhere, just to kind of keep it something special we did as a one-off. And then in 2006, Cloud just had this idea. What if Gary and Josh did a tour for 2 weeks across the country where it was LN MAP Unplugged? And it was so much fun. And, I mean, I didn't know this guy other than 5 years prior having dinner with him. And you would have thought we had been best friends for life. And we had deep conversations. And we were just driving. I mean, I think he had like a Toyota Camry or something. And we just had two guitars, an amp, and our CDs. And it was so different than everything I just listed with you because, you know, two guys, you know, no sharing beds. He's super healthy, so it pushed me to be more healthy. I remember one show we opened up for Ronnie Martin as Joy Electric. I think maybe a couple shows like that. And then I remember we played a couple shows opening up for Paige France, which was Mike and Whitney's band. And then so so much fun. Just him and I having great conversations, meeting fans, and also just the luxury of it was just him as LN, it was just me as Matt. So if there is a fan who asks for some random obscure song, I didn't have to worry about the drummer or the bass player knowing it. Like, we just did it. It was fun.
The tour was short and simple, but it was something that Gary would remember for the rest of his life.
when I'm listening to an LN song or a Gary Murray song or whatever, maybe I'm just straight up foolish. I believe him. And when he's singing something that is feels like heartache or heartbreak, or maybe like even like a heart soaring or singing, I believe it. I think what he's doing is true and real.
Really enjoyed getting to know Gary Murray, and we hope you have too. If you're curious to know what he's up to these days, we can tell you that he lives in his hometown of Bellevue, Ohio, and he's currently living in the same house he was raised in. He's been busy taking care of his father, who is suffering from dementia, so please keep both of them in your prayers. He owns an art studio where he displays his paintings. We'll leave his Instagram handle in the description of this episode so you can check it out. Believe me, his paintings are as good as his songs. He's been a librarian for the last 20 years. Obviously, he loves being surrounded by many great works. And he's been working on a side project called Lullabies for Houseplants since 2019. Give it a listen if you get a free moment. This concludes today's episode of the Velvet Blue Music Podcast. All song samples will be listed in the description of this episode, and they're available to stream on Apple Music, Spotify, or your favourite streaming service. You can support all Velvet Blue Music artists by purchasing merchandise on velvetbluemusic.com or velvetbluemusic.bandcamp.com. If you'd like to donate less than $1 a month to the VBM podcast, please click the support link in the show notes for more information. Like and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram for the latest news and upcoming episodes. See you next time.